there's enough cash in the financial system, and there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve, an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve,
an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I have been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now.
Arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
Think you was a hook, trust if your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks, hell of a saint. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, now I said a day. Now the new rent rap's just getting away. Big of the bank, leave a ripple effect. When it all blows up, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, it's not the success. Pull back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a busy net. Made from your savings and 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialize losses while reaping the gain. First to fall in this reckless war. Cause you're just a pawn in the fertility industry.
Money talks and pay for the show. Pay for the crowd. Pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Don't the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us a dream that never delivers. While we're heaping fees and clipping the tickets. Siphoning funds from the mouthless bigot. Blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingled to risk so nobody knows. How far ever go to a damaged collateral. Another excuse for oppressive control. The government kept you as part of the play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help but nobody came. And bailouts were pawns and complainants.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex and fallible humans left in check. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked. And our economies are large to X.
What would happen? We take our money out of its systems. Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purpose and power. How do we build a base? Replace the controlling effects with the will of free markets.
Step one.
Build an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step two.
Move our savings into that system so no one can ever touch it.
Step three.
Earn, save, spend, trade. All activities move this way. With our own money, everything changed. We no longer positive to you.
Money is data of who everyone wins. That's your score of politicians. Come and capture it out of the place, and we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being citizens. Move on from gambling savings. Move on from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't got the trust every word they say. So freedom and wealth can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can tempt the children of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, it's the game.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome to episode 58 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and we are going to have a fantastic episode today. We're going to be joined with some hosts from Marathon Digital Holdings. So I am very, very excited about this. I've got a ton of questions for them. I really do like the mining side of things, even though I have no idea how it works exactly. I'm a huge nerd with it. I think there's a lot of potential. So I am super excited for this episode. So we kind of get everybody trickling in. I see that we have Kevin already joining with us. Good morning. Good morning. I see we have Jordan, Gabe Lord, Bob Van Kirk. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you all doing?
Great.
Great, dude.
Hey, Kevin, is it just going to be yourself or are we going to have some more people trickling in?
Hey, it should be Stephen Raines should be joining. And I know we have Rob Samuels on from Mara as well.
Is he on the Mara handle?
No, I just saw Rob I saw his individual handle. Robert look down, well, let's see, Robert Samuels. I can see him. Yeah.
Robert, so go ahead and request to speak for me. I just got Steven up here.
There we go.
Hey, we can hear you loud and clear. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Rob. Robert, can you request your mic to be turned on? Robert Samuels, just a quick intro.
Here, I got Robert just now. I just approved it, so it might take him a second or two to get up here. Robert, as soon as you get on, go ahead and start talking just to make sure we can hear you, and we'll go ahead and start firing away on this. If you're trying to speak, Robert, you're still on mute.
Sorry, how's that?
That is perfect. We can hear you loud and clear. So gentlemen, I want to first of all thank you so much for joining us. Like I had said earlier, you might not have heard, but I really do like the mining side of things, and I think moving forward, especially with the new administration that's been put into place, I think there's going to be a huge push in the mining sector over the next several years. And I think there's going to be a global race. And again, I really do love the mining side, but there are a lot of things that are well over my head I don't really understand. So I'd like to get a better understanding of how things are going. I'd like to get your outlook on how you think the industry is going, some things you're excited for, some things that maybe cause you to have some caution or some worry. And then just any big announcements that we can kind of get from you with Mara over the next couple of weeks or months. So let's go ahead and just kind of kick it off. And if you guys want to tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you got into the industry and with Mara, whoever wants to go first, take the stage.
Yeah, I guess I'll start. My name is Robert Samuels. I head up investor relations here at Mara. I've actually been with the company for roughly 7-8 months now or so. My background is primarily in financial services, worked on Wall Street for a number of years before coming here. I am not a veteran, so I'm not going to be doing a lot of speaking on the call. I'm going to leave that up to my colleagues, Kevin and Steven. They're both fantastic. I believe Steven's also been at the company, I think actually shorter than I have. He can comment on that. I believe Kevin is actually the longest tenure, of all of us. We're going to be announcing earnings, this coming Tuesday on the 12th. After the close, so we're going to be very cautious in terms of what we talk, say, with regards to current business and future announcements. So I would just, tell everyone to, tune in on Tuesday after the close for our earnings announcement. And with that, I will turn it over to Kevin and Steve.
Thanks, Robert. I'll go ahead. Kevin Rash here. I've been with Mara actually a year ago yesterday, and pretty exciting time to be in Bitcoin mining and the energy industry, and was in the United States Air Force for 23 years. My first 6 years, I was a communications guy, electronics communications technician working on air traffic control and landing systems. And when I was in E3, I actually started going to grad school at night and ended up studying theology and philosophy and became a pastor, and then went into the military chaplaincy and spent 17 years as a military chaplain. Met my wife in the military. We met at our staff sergeant's course, so it was a pretty big scandal in the professional military education world. If you recall any of your buddies, your friends that hooked up at school, so that was pretty silly in terms of the perception. My wife and I got married in 2003, and she was a jet engine mechanic on F-16. She was active duty 11 years. And had a wonderful time serving our country, got to see behind the curtain. So really, really privileged to be in this nation and also feel the same way about Mara. I'll turn it over to Steven.
Yeah, hey, good morning, everybody. So again, also very excited to be here. Appreciate you guys having me this morning. Also, relatively new to Mara. I've been here about 4 months or so, coming over from the energy industry. And so I'm the director of energy origination at Clearway, at Mara, even still make that slip occasionally where I mention some of my old firms, but about 15 years in the energy industry. And then prior to that was in the Navy. So was a naval officer, did three deployments or portions of some deployments and full other deployments, all home ported out of San Diego, had three different warships, was a surface warfare officer, did my undergrad in Annapolis. So getting ready to, go back to, town for a couple days to go see, Navy Tulane. And of course, looking forward to, Army Navy game this year with how well both teams are playing. So, you know, tell people that I got my start in energy, in the Navy, which is not, uncommon by any means. I was the electrical officer and the assistant chief engineer, on USS Princeton. And so, started in energy there and, have had some interesting stops along the way and now very excited to be, part of the MARA team and working in this, what I think is a very, very interesting and revolutionary space and, excited to kind of work at what is this intersection of, energy and economics and national security and all of the things that this industry represents. So, appreciate you having me.
Well, thank you for that introduction, gentlemen. And again, I think I'm more excited to have you guys on here. So, if you all wanted to go ahead and if you had a certain direction you wanted to start with, we can do that. Or I have a bunch of questions I'd like to go ahead and fire off. So if you guys want to kind of lead us in a direction, we can do that, or we can just go ahead and start firing off with some questions.
No, feel free. Take it away.
Okay. So, I want to kind of just first, so Trump came into office, just over the last couple of days, and his biggest thing was increase our domestic energy in the United States and become energy independent. How do you guys view that's going to have an impact on Bitcoin mining and in the industry?
Well, I guess I'll jump on that one as the energy guy. You know, energy independence is interesting in that it's kind of a nebulous term, but it's inclusive of this idea that we are, when we think about petroleum, you know, call it kind of crude and petroleum. You know, the last time I looked at it, I think the U.S. consumption is around 20 million barrels a day. And so when you talk about energy independence, you have this idea of sort of, domestic oil production or crude oil production, actually pulling crude out of the ground. And for many ways, we do that. Another way to look at that is sort of also, are we a net importer or a net exporter? And, you know, the folks that are the market fundamentals analysts, will probably have the exact numbers. But when you think about energy independence, at least from a petroleum standpoint, that's how a lot of folks tend to think about it. You know, barrels per day, as well as then are we net importer, net exporter? When you bring power and electricity into the discussion, then you get the all important sort of, generation mix question, the natural gas question. And what does really that mix of generation in this country look like, where you have sort of the base load units like nuclear, as well as hydro. Then you have sort of the middle part of the stack, which are the natural gas supplied units. You know, coal traditionally kind of fits in that base load, but we see transition. And then you see kind of what's called the top of the generation stack, which is, these sort of variable energy resources and the big pushes that have been made to increase renewable development and renewable production, you know, across the United States, which I am a big believer in energy diversity. And so when you think about what it means to have energy independence, that is having, you know, a very diverse set of fuels and technology types to provide energy to, basically the grid and the people that are on the grid. And where, you know, crypto or Bitcoin especially is interesting is, looking for ways to add value to the energy sector as far as trying to essentially bring electricity demand, to generation centers. You know, the traditional sort of, energy model has always been you have sort of these large utility scale generators that exist in, you know, places where there's not a lot of population or a lot of what we call load. And then you bring it down transmission lines to the load centers, you know, essentially your major cities. And now, you know, by growing our increasing, footprint or by, increasing electricity demand, we are able to, you know, bring our mining facilities or our, digital asset compute for those that are also working in the AI space, you know, to those generation centers, partnering with renewables as a way to kind of help optimize their production as far as, you know, they're sometimes referred to as variable energy resources because, you know, wind doesn't blow every day. And although you can do a pretty good job predicting when the sun is going to rise and when it's going to set each day, where you are is going to impact that irradiance. And so having partners like the crypto community and digital asset compute partnering with the energy sector is a big part of where I think we're going to go. And that energy independence question, I think, I'm very bullish on it. And I think that the more megawatts and the different types of energies we're able to put on the grid, the better it will be for America. You know, energy, you know, powers everything else, obviously. And so, the more of it we have, the more we're able to produce, the stronger our nation and our economy are going to be.
So how quickly are we going to be able to deploy additional mining rigs and facilities, as we roll out these, different energy or diversified energy platforms?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. And that's each one I think is going to be specific to every company, right? And every company's strategy. You know, again, we'll kind of steer away a little bit from Mara and what they're specifically doing. But at the end of the day, you know, I think Mara views themselves as a way to monetize these pockets of the energy industry that have been either underutilized or, not even underutilized, but, you know, unoptimized relative to sort of the traditional energy framework. And so that's an exciting problem to work on. And so every firm is going to attack it a little bit differently. And they're going to bring their unique skill sets, you know, whether it's strictly within the mining space or whether it's in, network validation or whether it's in, you know, AI and other sort of digital asset compute. There's different sort of tools in that toolbox, and every company I think is going to approach it differently. And I think that, again, it's beneficial for us to get after it. And in the mining space or in the Bitcoin space, there's always this component of you're racing against time, you know, as far as not only competitors, but then the halvings as well. So it's fun to be working on those problems, and it's fun to be working fast to solve them.
Absolutely. I want to tug a little bit on that thread there. Unless Kev, you had something you wanted to add.
Yeah, I was just simply going to add, you know, you step back and you look at the entire industry, you can see that Bitcoin is incentivizing companies like us and the entire industry to look at opportunities to add value to the energy industry. And so while many in this conversation know that, I think it's important to point out that it's part of it is Bitcoin itself and a lot of the things that help that draw us to this field, at least to me. I was thinking about energy. I was thinking about understanding Bitcoin mining, and then also understanding, you know, the financial world after having left my military career in 2022. And so it's fascinating to watch that it's the values that we see within the protocol itself, the open source protocol, the proof of work, you know, it's just really exciting to see the entire industry look for opportunities to add value to the energy industry and to disintermediate some of the challenges that we see with the grid, the energy demand that's coming to the grid and transmission limitations and distribution limitations. You know, we're able to bring the market to the producers. And so it's just really exciting.
I want to go ahead as you answered my question there, Kev. I'm not sure how closely you all follow Jason Lowry with his thesis on there's going to be a global hash war, a race to acquire the most hash power. I know, Fred Thiel posted, a couple weeks ago, on his comments he made from a VanEck representative stating that the BRIC nations are mining Bitcoin with government resources. And so, Fred went on and posted, for those of you who saw my presentation from the, AIM summit on exactly this topic, it's all about sovereigns owning Bitcoin block space. If you don't own block space, you might not be able to transact your reserve assets held in Bitcoin. So how quickly do you see the gears and the government in this new administration trying to heavily focus on acquiring a significant increase in hash power and the ability to control the blocks? If anybody can answer that.
Yeah, I wish I had a crystal ball and could presume to understand, you know, what an administration is going to do, what our government's going to do. So I don't know that, but it's clear that sovereigns are starting to recognize that. And I know that there are people working very hard in our nation to bring these issues to leaders so that they can appropriately understand the priority. But I can't say. I don't know how quickly that will happen. I don't know. What do you guys think? Stephen?
Yeah, I agree with you, Kevin. I mean, I wish I had that crystal ball also, and I don't know or have insights into what you know, the government or the new Trump administration will be working on or how quickly they'll want to do it. But I think you hit on a pretty salient point in that, you know, what Bitcoin represents and the potential it holds as a possible sort of you know, reserve currency or a vehicle to enable international trade, especially for, you know, regions that have traditionally not, you know, been sort of hard asset holders, or they've always been subject to, you know, sort of US dollar or, you know, the global economic system, as far as its ability to transact, is that, you know, economics are, and for this group, you know, of veterans, you know, there's sort of that economic lever and that economic might that, nation states wield. And then there's the good old fashioned, you know, rocks and sticks, and you hope you never kind of get to that as far as what nation states will wield. And I think, you know, it's an important part of the global security picture as it relates to international economics and the ability to conduct international trade. And so the U.S., having always traditionally been big proponents of international trade and free trade and, you know, stable and affluent sort of free markets. I think that there'll be some, you know, some nice tailwinds, for the industry writ large. But I agree with Kev. I don't have any, I don't have any insight into who's working that problem or at what speed they're gonna be approaching it.
I will add though, I remember being at the Bitcoin Policy Institute in DC earlier this year, and Senator Lummis, you know, definitely understands the importance of Bitcoin and the industry. And when I think about, you know, the dime model, diplomacy, information, military, economic power, instruments of power that the government has, I remember as an officer, you know, we talked about this a lot in our training and our professional military education settings, the degree to which leaders understand that Bitcoin is a very important part of economic power. And I think that's what Fred and Lowry are circling, is that concept of economic power. And I know that Senator Lummis and people like her, and, you know, even within like our colleague, Jason Browder, Government Affairs, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs, there are people hard at work bringing awareness to leaders so that they can understand Bitcoin's role and crypto's role. I mean, I'm a Bitcoin guy, so no shade to all the crypto folks, but I'm a Bitcoin maxi, just being honest. You know, this is a veteran space, so we like to tell the truth about who we are. So Bitcoin, I think it at the degree to which leaders understand what economic power really is, if they understand Bitcoin, I don't see how you could miss that. That's just my own personal opinion. And if you look at the president-elect and the people that he has around him, it seems highly probable that he has an idea of how Bitcoin, or he's got the right people around him who can help him understand the role Bitcoin should play in that. I mean, the fact that within this last year, you had a presidential candidate coming to a Bitcoin conference, I think, is significant. So, yeah, hopefully that starts to answer the question to some degree.
No, it absolutely did. And I appreciate your response to that. So I want to go ahead back to Steve. You were mentioning earlier that a lot of the Bitcoin miners are starting to incorporate AI into their strategy, using those facilities to plug in the miners to. I've heard a lot of mixed feedback on the pros and the cons for the miners kind of spending their resources with the AI facility, and I would just like to get you your opinion or your thoughts on how you think that unfolds. And I'm sorry, I don't even think in my head that question made sense. If you need me to rephrase it, let me know.
No worries. Again, I think it's, as I'm understanding it or as I'm following you, is I think it becomes a very firm specific choice, right? And a strategic choice about how each company can choose to, you know, dip their toe in varying degrees into the AI space, or, you know, every business model is going to be a bit different. And so that's an independent sort of strategy discussion. But what we know, and I tend to think of it on the energy side, I come from the energy side as opposed to the compute side. So there are people far better than me to kind of comment upon it. But what we know is that both are going to have a pretty sizable impact and a potential sort of underlying market fundamentals shift in that, you know, demand supply equation. And so, you know, with AI, with crypto, with EVs, you know, sort of all of this that kind of comes into the world of energy transition and or demand, each firm is going to have to think about how they fit into that demand equation and the best way that they can solve the demand problem. And so, there's areas to be monetized across AI. Obviously there's the crypto component of being a load center and having significant energy demand. And then every company is going to make a strategic decision about, you know, the talent that they have from an organizational perspective, from a, you know, balance sheet perspective, from a technological, you know, perspective. What do they think is the best way to attack that problem? And as an energy person, I tend to think about it as demand and how do we achieve, you know, re-achieve balance between the supply and the demand side of the equation. And when you start to have an imbalance there between those two, that's when you see price volatility occur. And so, you're going to need savvy people, that can determine where those pricing volatilities will be. How do they optimize and profit from that volatility? How do they effectively mitigate financial risk against that volatility? And how do you ultimately drive value for a company or the owners or the shareholders? And so I don't have a great answer for you as far as to what extent, you know, there's a mining sort of AI crossover or when and how that should be used. But I think about it as, you know, a problem for the energy space. How do we sort of manage the volatility and the imbalance across the energy sector that could result? And then I think we've shown that as always, and this is not unique to Bitcoin and it's not unique to energy, but business and innovation are always going to be quicker than the policy and the regulatory environment are going to be. And so as you have this collision of, you know, AI, crypto, energy, you know, energy is one of the most regulated industries in the world. And so thinking about how you kind of take that that mindset to, you know, move fast and break things, or I'd almost call it almost like a special operations mentality within the crypto or the Bitcoin space, where it's like, we're going to move quick, we're going to travel light, we're going to move swift, we're going to do our weapons pairing in a way that's meaningful for whatever the mission objective is, you know, very different from, say, like a big behemoth that moves like, say, big Navy or big Army, you know, in the energy space. And so that'll be interesting to see. And I don't want to take us too far off topic or down a rabbit hole, but then when you bring the AI discussion to bear, not only do you have regulatory, but you have all of these sort of existential questions too about, you know, is it here to help? Is it not here to help? How do we think about it from an ethics perspective, that, you know, the good old fashioned sort of like military ethics discussions as opposed to the dollars and cents of the balance sheet. And so I think it's, you know, important that we have a lot of those existential discussions, but you know, that doesn't always translate to a balance sheet, but you have those, dynamics intermingling and at play. So hope I didn't take us too far off the path there, but, that's how I tend to think about it.
No, that was perfect. Thank you. You answered that perfectly for me. So I want to shift gears just a little bit. I know recently you donated 20 miners to Operation Bitcoin, to help them, train military veterans on how to use repair, Bitcoin miners. The question I have for you all is, how impactful are military veterans joining your team versus regular civilians? What advantages do we bring?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, as you and I know, the military experience can add tremendous value to people's lives, and the people that get it when you get in, the ones that are problem solvers, that are value added, those people that really are looking for impact and join the military for the purpose of, you know, being part of something bigger, serving their nation, just being part of something that really gives their life meaning or helps them, exercise the, sorry, my kids are distracting me in the background. So military veterans hey, Steve, can you take this real quick? I apologize, guys.
Yeah, I'll be happy to. And, this is one that, I'm pretty passionate about, and, you know, veteran hiring, getting veterans, you know, transitioning either, we call it blue to gray or, you know, green to gray, you know, when in the days where everyone was still wearing suits. Now, I often sport my finest Under Armour, since we're working from home a lot more these days than we used to. But this idea of, when I think of the Bitcoin industry specifically, and I'll start there and then kind of walk it back to some others, is that this is an industry that for all intents and purposes is still very much, you know, in its early days, right? I want to say it's kind of matured out of infancy, but we're really in maybe that second stage. We're not even a mature industry yet. And so with that come a lot of problems that while you can find subject matter expertise, you know, a lot of problems that are new and haven't been solved, or there isn't an answer, right? And, or there isn't a right answer because no one's done it the quote unquote right way yet. And so where that translates really, really well to the veteran community is, you know, sort of like, you know, day one of leadership school at Navy, you know, you have this message to Garcia, right? We don't have the every answer. There will always be ambiguity, right? And it's just powering through, thinking, innovating, finding a solution, which quite honestly is so, you know, embedded in our DNA that's vastly different from, not all, but certainly a lot of just sort of civilians and the natural civilian mindset. And it's, so we're going to go, we're going to put a team together. We're going to be very, you know, brutally honest or radically transparent about what we know and what we don't know. And then we're going to go after that mission objective. And there's a lot of ways to solve that problem. And so you need to have people that are willing to think that way, and someone who's, you know, willing to take a little bit of a leadership risk, or someone that's willing to, you know, our colloquialism, I guess, is always, let's ask for forgiveness and not for permission, right? And sometimes that's not going to work out so well, but a lot of times that really sort of brings mission accomplishment. And so I think that's one where it just naturally, comes to people that have our shared DNA or that have our shared sort of mindset, which is really, really, applicable to this industry. Then when we take that then a step back further, which is then you do have some legitimate parallels with technical expertise and people's knowledge is that, you know, when I first got out of school, you know, newly commissioned Butterbar and I'm at Newport going to surface warfare school, you know, my first sort of like follow on collateral duty was going to communications officer school. And so it's okay. You know, I was never a commo in my 5 years of active duty, but I spent time in commo school and learned about like electronic keys. And so, you know, I knew electronic keys before we ever had crypto, right? And so people have that knowledge, or in the energy space, you know, very well worn path as far as, you know, people that are nuclear engineers that go in, you know, on subs or carriers that then go work in nuclear power plants, or people that are, you know, Air Force jet engine or Navy gas turbine techs making their way to gas turbine power plants, or IT and crypto people. I mean, you think about the wealth of people across the services that are working on, you know, signals intelligence and communications and securing those communications and all of that sort of high level tech compute work that is just sort of happening every day, you know, in the military, that then really translates well into, you know, mining operations and on-site mining and, you know, working in on the tech side of the industry in addition to the energy space. And so, and then just general leadership, which kind of brings us full circle back to this, you know, let's take a team of people, let's determine a unified sort of mission objective and go attack it. And so there's a lot of those elements that are inherent to veterans. And then I think, as you then have the discussion about what the actual hard skills or the technical skills are, you know, there's going to be a lot of doors that open. And then the last thing I'll say before I kind of close on that point is then where it's really important for people that are either already in the industry or people that are in the adjacent industries is then being advocates for the transitioning veteran. One, because we speak that language. Those of us that are veterans that are already in private sector or private industry very much have a responsibility of kind of serving as the translator or the Rosetta Stone for not only transitioning veterans, but then also the civilian parts of our company, the civilian hiring managers, the civilian HR departments, so that we can help the veterans articulate their skills and experience better, help the hiring managers and the companies understand those hard technical skills and say, this is why this is value add for our organization and this is why it's directly relevant. And then that will give the veteran a leg up when it comes down to that sort of last few people around the table making a hiring decision saying, is it candidate A or candidate B? It's like we have all these wonderful intangibles that come with being a veteran. And now because we have someone inside, you know, the castle wall, someone that's already inside the company that's helped us understand maybe a little bit more about what this person is about or this candidate is about, that's going to help push veterans over the finish line. And that's how we, you know, that's what we do, right? Like we take care of each other. We take care of our own. We never leave a man behind. Like the same applies here. The only difference is, you know, it's you got happy hour at the end of the day, as opposed to, you know, something that's a little more, intense. But it's the same concept.
Yeah. And thanks for jumping on that, Steve. Guys, I got 16-year-old triplets and a 13-year-old and they're all homeschooled. So, appreciate your understanding there. But what I'll add is, you know, the willingness of people to serve in the military, often that translates into their civilian career, or it can. And I found that companies like Mara, you know, starts with Fred, but companies that value the skill set of veterans, if they're willing to take a chance and hire us, if our resumes don't exactly fit, what they find is we bring problem solving to the table. We bring solution focus to the table. And I know I've done what I can to try to put forth candidates for positions that would bring value. And just it's such a great opportunity to add value to the energy industry, Bitcoin mining is evolving, and it feels like the future is being built. And so the degree to which, you know, the economy and energy are national security issues is the degree to which maybe a veteran can find value and purpose in this industry. And so the problem-solving mindset, military decision-making process, the things I learned hanging out and supporting Army Special Operations have just been so helpful to me. The job I was hired to do, they took a risk on me. Mara did. And that's all I've been doing is identifying problems and trying to solve them. And so I'm on the board with Gabe at Operation Bitcoin. And so we're just super grateful that there are companies like Mara who are willing to open up pathways for us so we can help build this future.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that, gentlemen. And so if you're a veteran, if you're in the community and, if you're looking for work, definitely keep your eyes peeled, because these Bitcoin miners and these other companies realize how valuable you are. So just keep your eyes open, your ears open, and if there's openings, feel free to apply.
Can I jump in for a second, Coleman? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry.
All right. Yeah, I couldn't resist. I'm literally listening to this, standing in my house, pumping my fist at the comments that Stephen and Kevin are sharing with us. And I did just want to throw out a sincere thank you to Mara for donating those mining rigs to us. We had a Operation Bitcoin had a training session at a Georgia State Veteran Education Training Center yesterday. It was our third one. And at this session, we were able to provide some hands-on mining tech familiarization with the attendees there, with a group of veterans that were there. And it took it to another level. So they actually were able to get their hands in there and look at it and start to understand and bring a topic that's somewhat abstract for many people when we're talking about Bitcoin and really bring it into the physical realm for them. And it sparked a whole different direction of conversation. And it also increased their interest in seeking out work in the industry, which is a goal, obviously. And so thank you for that. The support for veterans it's evident and it's obvious. And it continues to reaffirm for me the fact that the talent war is going to heat up, because the industry is, I don't need to tell you, it's explosive right now, and we can expect it to be the same for the foreseeable future. And so as we're having these conversations with veterans who are interested in entering into the industry, of course, values, personal mission, ethos, all those things are relevant. What could either one of you share about the internal culture at Mara, the ethos there, the values of the organization? What could you share with us that we could pass on to veterans that are interested in joining your team?
Yeah, it's a great question, Gabe. And I said this to, let me give you an example. Yesterday was my first year anniversary of being at Mara. And Fred shot me a personal note, like an individual message, like, hey, Kevin, thanks for being here and adding value. And this team across the board, from Fred, Jim Crawford, COO, my former boss, Raymond, Senior Vice President of Mining Operations, my current teammates, Chris Ruppel, Wyatt Sheely, the team at Mara reflects the same values that I saw my last 7 years I worked with U.S. Air Force Pararescue or United States Army Special Operations ODA teams, Green Beret teams. And so for me, the culture is very, very similar. It's high performance, high accountability, truth telling, commitment to continuous and never ending improvement. Yeah. So just across the board, it's one of the best teams I've ever been on professionally. Military and civilian.
Yeah, I would add. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Robert.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd love to jump in on that question too, because I've only been at the company for, like I said, just several months now, and having come from big Wall Street firms, I can tell you that the culture at Mara is really second to none. I mean, I love to tell people that we are, if you wouldn't know that the company was 100% virtual, you would, and I told you that we were, and you saw us together, you would think I was lying. You know, because we come together, you know, once a month as a team. You know, there's just a ton of camaraderie. You know, even though we are virtual, you know, there's a ton of, you know, collaboration, you know, all day long. Again, this, you know, constant and never ending improvement attitude that Fred instills, you know, amongst the team. And, you know, Fred is, he's a terrific leader. He's a real visionary. And, you know, the culture starts at the top, you know, from him. And, it really is, I think it's really unique to see. And it's, you know, I feel it's very fortunate to be a part of. Yeah. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. And then I'll bring the broken record piece in is that, you know, having been here 4 months, you know, I tell people, you know, I'm telling my friends, I'm telling my family, you know, this is the most fun I have had professionally, you know, probably ever in the private sector. And I compare it to, you know, I had a boarding team in 04, you know, where we were doing some anti-piracy and some VBSS. And, you know, I said, other than that, you know, which I will always consider my best job ever, like this is the closest thing, or this is certainly the best thing I've done in the private sector. And, what I have found unique about it thus far is, you know, I kind of already alluded it to in some of my previous comments is that every single person I've interacted with, you know, their mindset is, well, how can we do that? It's not, you can't do that. It's how can we do that? Or let's think about how we can, as opposed to no, you can't, because there's some sort of, you know, company reason or some sort of financial partner or something like that. And, you know, some of those do exist, you know, you inevitably run into those, but the mindset is let's win and attack the problem, not let's not even have an at bat. And so that's pretty unique and that's pretty special. And then I would second everything that these guys have already said, as far as everyone's very professional, everyone's working hard, but also dedicated to team success, which is, again, very, very important. And you don't see that in a lot of other places, very, very individual focused or individual merit. And here there's very much a team ethos to what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I appreciate all three of you going into that for me. And because it's something that I believe is going to become more and more important as the industry continues to grow and evolve, is the internal cultures of the organizations. And when something grows so quickly, I think that is something that gets missed for some of the companies that are out there right now. And so I commend you for your focus on that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Really quick, I just want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo supplies at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And Bitcoin Alaska, make sure you guys clear your schedules. Robert, Steve, Kev, July 5th and 6th in Juneau, Alaska, we're going to have one of the greatest Bitcoin events going on. It's going to be family friendly, so bring the kids, bring the wives, bring the triplets. Again, we're going to have a lot of pre-event activities going on. Satellite events kick off on July 2nd. Pre-conference event, we're going to take a cruise up to one of the fjords, and this will be one of the only conferences in the world where when you buy a whale pass, you're actually going to see whales with that ticket. So make sure you join. We're going to have a firework event. We're going to participate in the Juneau's 4th of July parade. So we will have cars and vehicles in the parade itself. And then the conference will be July 5th and 6th. And so one of the biggest things to make sure is that Juneau is the policy hub of Alaska, and it has a permanent fund corporation. And so there's a lot of resources out there for oil and gas and natural resources, which I think would be a perfect opportunity for a mining company to come in, Mara, and maybe talk to some of the people in charge at Juno. So it'd be a good foot through the door. So you guys should definitely talk it amongst yourselves and bring it up to the higher heads at MARA and see if we can get you guys out there to this conference. I'm not sure if you've ever been to Alaska. But Alaska in the summer is absolutely beautiful. If you do go up there, I would highly recommend just buying a one-way ticket because it's going to be really hard for you guys to want to come back.
So my father-in-law was a Air Force forward controller for many years and spent a not insignificant amount of time up in Alaska. And so you want to talk about a place that's different than Phoenix, Arizona, Alaska is probably it, but he continues to regale us with his stories of his time up there. And so that's very cool. So I'll work it. I'll start messaging that to the team here and we'll see if we can't get something done.
Yeah, definitely. See if you can travel up there on company dime. But if not, I definitely encourage you guys to come out there as a trip. Again, it is going to be a family friendly event. There's going to be a lot of things for the children, and for the spouses if they don't want to actually sit at the conference. But it's going to be an amazing time. So highly recommend you guys consider it. I have a link up there in the nest. Yomar, Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Jordan, do you guys have any questions, that I didn't answer?
I just like to throw in that, Alaska, here in Southeast Alaska, we've got the native corporations, a lot of them that run their own individual energy grids, hydro. And then up in the North Slope, we've got roughly 10.5 petawatt of natural gas that's just sitting on capped wells. So this is definitely a good opportunity to educate our policymakers here in Juneau. This is where they meet. Besides the Alaska Retirement Board, the individual unions that have Juneau as their home base. This is just a really high impact community. So the goal is to flip the state, and that's the hope of the conference, is to educate people who just don't understand what the asset is. Unfortunately, the policymakers haven't, gone over that edge yet, and I want to put them over that edge. So the goal of the conference isn't to charge a high amount, make a lot of money. It's strictly to change the state, to move it forward.
Oh, go ahead, Kev. Did you have a question?
Oh, no, I was just going to say thanks for sharing that. And there's also an amazing guard unit up there, the 212th pararescue unit. First casualty I ever worked in Afghanistan was a guy named Cody Inman, amazing PJ. So they're a state asset, but they do a lot of amazing stuff around the globe rescuing people. So, yeah, just love that area.
Perfect.
I just want to throw out there, it's really awesome you guys came out and spent time chatting with us. I really appreciate it. It's really interesting to get your take from it. And, if you guys ever need a data scientist, be sure to reach out. So.
All right, gentlemen. So you've now just been called up to the White House. You are now the lead committee members on the strategic Bitcoin reserve and trying to acquire as much Bitcoin as possible for the United States. What policies are you going to implement and what are you going to try and deregulate to make this happen?
So say that again.
You guys have now in this little scenario, you guys are going to be in charge of the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve Committee. So using whether it be Federal Reserve funds or just our energy infrastructure to acquire as much Bitcoin as possible in the hash force race. What are you guys going to do and what would you deregulate to make your job easier?
So I would immediately hand it over to Michael Saylor, who we would have hired to handle this entire process. Does that make sense, guys?
That makes sense. So I guess in a roundabout way, what regulations or what hiccups do you guys have currently in the industry that prevent you to being extremely effective with mining?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're effective, at least with, when we look at the targets in front of us and how hard we work at accomplishing our mission. Right now I honestly don't think about that much. Steve, Robert, I don't know what you guys think. I haven't spent a lot of time trying to figure out what I would change, quite honestly, guys, because being in ops every day, There are problems to solve. There are efficiencies to increase. There are things we can do to get more effective. And so that's what makes this industry so exciting, is that it's still evolving and it hasn't ossified. And because of the halving cycle and the dynamic of the cost of energy, there's just, it's such a dynamic space to be working in. It reminds me of in my military career, like there was never enough schedule, always too many tasks, not enough resources, and everyone else, like if you're a civilian, people tend to think we have everything that we need. You know, even some of the best units you can imagine. I had a chance to work with some white soft teams and even some tier one teams in terms of indirect support and sometimes directly supporting them. And there was just always a need to maximize resources to solve problems. And so, yeah, I know that doesn't directly answer your question, but those are my honest thoughts on it.
Yeah, this is one where I wish, I had, Jason's insight to be able to lead the policy discussion. But, you know, for me, again, kind of coming at it or attacking it from the energy side as opposed to the pure sort of BTC side is, and this is not new for even Bitcoin industry specific, but this idea of, you know, we know that there is this large demand on the horizon. So how do we do as much as we can from a supply perspective? So when you think about, reforming interconnection queues so that generation can get built faster, is important. Transmission always remains one of the hardest things to do in the energy industry, because when you have not only huge sort of capital spend or capital expense, you have in many cases, if you're going to build, big transmission lines, you're going to have multiple state entities as well as federal entities involved. And so this idea of, grid modernization, building generation to accommodate all this supply that's going to be barreling down the road, working on these things like, what had been a dormant nuclear industry for many, many years, bringing people to the table there and helping, shore up that segment of the energy industry will be important and frankly critical for veterans if we want to be honest, because we're going to need people that understand nuclear energy and, bring that back to the forefront of the discussion as opposed to where it was kind of, legacy or people thought that it was, had gotten too expensive or, prohibitively so, or, there just wasn't the talent or the brain horsepower that was there. And I mean, that's a weird thing to say about like nuclear physicists and nuclear engineers, right? They have plenty of like brain and horsepower there to do the job, but just the quantity and the number of people. So I think of, any sort of regulation or policy that's going to advance America's domestic energy strength is a net positive for our entire industry.
Hey Steve, I think this question will probably fall in for you as well. But there's been a lot of news about different AI centric companies working to spin up new or previously shut down nuclear reactors. And like one of the thoughts that I've had is that like it kind of like perhaps like Bitcoin miners could eat up the excess energy when there's like off peak hours or if they're just overproducing for what their needs are at the time. Have you guys have any discussions about like, is there potential for partnerships or is that something like that, might be seen as like a viable, source for energy?
Yeah. So it's a great question. And again, don't want to steer too much into, Mara's sort of specific business strategy. But when you think about, just crypto mining in general, right? One of the big value props or the value adds of our industry and our capabilities are this idea of being able to, in some cases, not all cases, a lot of sort of contractual design, but we have some ability to flex, to ramp up and down more quickly than other assets, that are able to, as you correctly point out, sort of, soak up these unmonetized or unutilized megawatt hours in these off-peak periods or times where the grid is not operating at near capacity. then we are able to sort of partner with folks or be an off-taker for those folks because it, you know, we have an interest in consuming that energy, but we also have the ability, to back out of the way at times. You know, again, assuming there's not some sort of other like larger contractual obligation where we're not mining during peak hours. And so it's this inherent flexibility, that is valuable, to us as a company and others as a company. And so is how do we, as companies, so it's how do we then employ that strategy effectively in order to achieve, you know, economic value, not only for, you know, our firm or the a Bitcoin firm, but then also the energy firms view that as added benefit too, because now they have, you know, new sources of revenue, or they're reducing sort of operational spend by reducing wear and tear on their assets because they don't have to yank and bank their turbines around as much or things like that. So there is some work to be done there, but it is one of the unique value propositions of our industry, and partnering intelligently with those other sort of large scale generation firms or other energy players is important.
Well, thank you for that, Steve. So we are getting to the top of the hour, and I want to be respectful of everyone's time. Did anybody have any questions that we didn't ask for the gentleman on the panel? I'm going to take that as a no. Gentlemen, is there any final comments or closing remarks you'd like to make? Anything that we can do just to help your mission?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that stands out to me, especially thinking about veterans, is, you know, the working a bunch of crisis issues in my past career, it's just so important to reach out to the veteran brothers and sisters that you served with. It's the number one thing that insulates people against self-harm. Just calling people, reaching out to them, even when you don't think you need to, you know, often we just get busy and we forget to follow up with folks and check on them. And often it even means, digging in a little bit when someone's acting like they're okay. So it just, to me, working those high risk situations throughout the last 17 years of my career, just want to emphasize that, you know, you may be the person that not only prevents someone from hurting themselves, but more than that, it's about, strength building and optimizing, you know, relationships in one another's lives. So just don't dismiss the importance of building relationships and, you know, sort of the proof of work value, as you see it manifesting in relationships. So it's important to me.
Yeah, totally agree. And that's, you know, we take care of our own, right? So, I mean, it's, and that's both on the career front and that is, you know, on the life and personal front too. So, you know, for everyone that's on this call or everyone that's in the industry, you know, I encourage you to be that voice of education for others, both on the civilian and military side. Bring that narrative, extol the virtues of the veteran community and the folks, that can join the veteran community. And because we're already here, you know, and we've already achieved some mission success, you know, now I would say the way we define further success is by bringing others along with us and growing that. So, you know, take care of each other.
To that end, real quick, there's a lot of nonprofits. If you are like transitioning out of the military, or if you are an employer looking, you know, there's different groups that kind of help out. One of the ones I know of is like 4 Block. So, you know, Google around, some of the things out there are pretty cool. So, just want to throw that out there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, gentlemen. This was amazing. I really do appreciate you taking time out of your day to hang out with us. It does mean a lot. And again, can we point anyone, just to follow the Mara, tag or, the handle, or what's the best way to support y'all with Marathon?
Yeah, I think the best way is, follow us on Twitter. You know, I have corporate handle. Several folks are also on Twitter under their own individual handles. You know, Fred is pretty active on Twitter as well. I'm sure some of you already follow him. And like I said at the top of the call, we will be announcing earnings on Tuesday after the close. So looking forward to that. And thanks again for having us.
Yes, excellent. Thank you guys for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. So we'll go ahead and we'll end the show here. So I want to thank everybody who joined us today on the panel, our guest speakers, everybody in the audience who tuned in to listen or just had us in the background to tune out the noises in your head. It means a lot to me. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern time. We are going to have Ben with BTC Sessions joining us. It'll be another good discussion. But get out there and like, Steve and Kevin said, make sure you help others, go out there and sometimes just reaching out, saying hello, talk to them. A lot of people are struggling with the same thing and that's just the rising cost of goods. Show them what Bitcoin can do. Show them that there is an escape from this and that it's a lot easier, than most people think, and just point them in the right direction. Point them to us, point them to this page, to this space, and we'll guide them on their journey. There's going to be a lot of people finding us as we start to hit peak on this bull cycle, so make sure they start off on a good foot. But that's it. I want you guys to go out there and have a fantastic day and just go crush it, but don't shitcoin. It's like buying a lottery ticket with yesterday's numbers.
Thanks, everyone.